Hi, I'm Jill, and with me is Carlos. Welcome to Module 2 of the Learning to Learn course.
Jill, I see that this module is about continuing competence. So what topics are we going to cover?
The first topic is the importance of healthcare professionals committing to lifelong learning. Next, we'll define and describe continuing competence. We'll then explain a recommended 6-step continuing competence program. And finally, we'll look at competence development strategies or the many different ways nurses can learn.
Sounds like some interesting and important topics.
Yeah.
Let's begin.
Okay. So, Carlos, what are some reasons that healthcare professions must engage in ongoing professional development?
Well, the most obvious reason is to keep our nursing knowledge and skills up to date.
Yeah. In order to be effective nurses, we must maintain and enhance our professional competence. Any other reasons?
Another important reason is to keep my nursing license. In my jurisdiction, we're required by our college to participate in a continuing competence program.
Yeah. And the reason most healthcare professionals are required to participate in continuing competence or education programs is for the protection of public health and safety. Maintaining our professional competence is important in ensuring that we provide safe and ethical care to our clients and patients.
Yeah. And another good reason to keep on learning is that the more I know, the more comfortable, confident, and satisfied I am with my nursing work and career.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. Related to that reason is that by developing and expanding our competence, we'll have more options and choices regarding our work and careers.
Yeah, so I guess this means that to be a competent nurse these days requires us to engage in continuous professional learning.
Yeah. Let's back up for a moment and define professional competence.
Okay. To me, professional competence is being proficient in doing a job.
Yes, that's correct. The technical definition is that competency is being able to perform the work task. Being competent requires a person to have the knowledge, skills, judgment, attitudes, and values to do an effective job.
And what is a continuing competence program?
A continuing competence program, or CCP, is an organized and systematic way to assess, maintain, and monitor the ongoing knowledge, skills, judgments, and attitudes of a professional practitioner. The CCP is a way of ensuring a high level of expertise, competence, and appropriate ethics in performing the job. Most regulated professions have continuing competence programs in place, although they may be referred to differently by each profession.
I believe that one of the important components of a continuing competence program is that it focuses on the priority learning needs of the practitioner.
Yes, research has shown that much unstructured, informal professional development involves topics of personal interest, learning opportunities that are convenient and available, or recurring certification requirements such as CPR and first aid. This haphazard approach rarely results in development of competencies that are critical to effective job performance. We'll talk more about identifying and prioritizing learning needs shortly.
Great.
Here are the 6 steps in a typical continuing competence program. Let's do this one together. You start.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, step one is to identify your learning or professional development needs.
And once you have identified your learning needs, step two is to prioritize these needs and focus on addressing the most important ones.
Step three is to prepare a learning plan. This is a map or a blueprint consisting of a list of activities and tasks you intend to undertake to address your learning needs.
Step four is to complete the learning activities and tasks described in your learning plan.
Step five involves taking some time to evaluate the effectiveness and impact of the various learning activities.
The final step, step six, is to document and record your professional development activities. In many jurisdictions, documentation of professional development is a requirement to comply with the profession's continuing competence program. The first step in a continuing competence program is to identify your learning needs. There are several different ways of doing this.
Yeah, the first recommended method is self-reflection about your practice. Ask yourself questions such as, can I meet key performance expectations both for my current work setting and nursing profession as a whole? Another good question is, can I meet the current standards of care? Are there any areas that I need to improve upon?
Other self-reflective questions include, how up-to-date am I with current theory and practice? Are there areas I need to refresh, review, or learn? Are there changes in current or planned practice or technologies that I need to learn?
The second way to identify learning needs is to use self-assessment forms or checklists. One good source for nursing competencies is the Learning Nurse website. They have over 3,000 different competencies listed in 30 areas of nursing.
To assess your current nursing knowledge, take the various tests and quizzes that are available online. If, for example, the Learning Nurse website currently has over 160 nursing quizzes on a wide range of topics.
Oh, and Jill, performance reviews and employer feedback are excellent sources of information on areas that you may need to improve.
Feedback from your clients or patients, the staff, and colleagues are another valuable source of information.
And finally, there are nursing tasks or procedures that you're required to do in your practice, but you're often hesitant or lack confidence in doing them. These should be included in your list of learning needs.
Absolutely.
Okay, Jill, now I have this long list of learning needs that I've identified in step one. How do I select which ones I should do first?
Oh, excellent question. The final decision on your learning priorities is, of course, up to you. However, the following criteria may help nurses decide what's most important. The first priority should always be to fix any significant performance deficiencies. So if there are tasks or procedures that you're not doing well, then these need to be addressed first. This is because the effectiveness of your practice and client safety are involved.
The second priority should be to maintain or enhance the competencies that will contribute to improvements in efficiency, safety, and client service.
Competencies that fall into the third category are those that need to be updated or enhanced because of changes in the practice or technology that is being adopted or used.
The fourth priority is competencies you may wish to acquire or enhance that will prepare you for career change or advancement.
The lowest priority are those competencies related to routine wellness and self-care. We're not saying that looking after yourself is unimportant.
No.
Keeping physically and mentally fit is important, but it should be a lower priority compared to the others.
And although most continuing competence programs operate on an annual basis, it's okay to have a list of priority learning needs that you can work on over a longer period of time, such as 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. To summarize, nurses should evaluate each of their learning needs against this list of suggested criteria. This will provide them with a list of their priority learning needs that should be entered into their learning plans. These learning priorities may not be the ones they're keen to undertake, but they are the ones that will benefit them, their current practice, and their clients the most.
Good point, Jill.
Now that we have a list of priority learning needs, the next step is to prepare a learning plan. The format and content of the plans may differ across jurisdictions, but will likely contain the following data.
The first thing that needs to be done is translate the learning needs into specific competencies that are to be developed or enhanced. If your jurisdiction has a competency profile, reference the relevant competencies.
Once you have defined the competencies, the next step is to specify several learning objectives. That is, what do you want to learn to improve or enhance each competency?
The next bit of data to be entered into your learning plan is how you plan to learn. This includes a short description of the learning methods, events, or activities you plan to undertake to do the actual learning.
You should set target dates for expected completion of the learning activities. Setting targets is helpful in planning and executing your activities in a timely manner.
Yeah, your learning plan is not meant to be a fixed document. You should update it annually or whenever there are changes in your circumstances or practice.
Step 4 is to do the learning as outlined in your learning plan. There are many ways to do the learning. So here are some examples. We'll provide a much more extensive list a bit later in this presentation. Once you have completed a learning activity, you should evaluate the results. These evaluations may be useful to you in the future. You can also share your evaluations with your supervisor or manager and colleagues.
Oh, that's an important point, Jill. I'm sure all of us have attended a seminar or workshop or other event that didn't prove to be very useful. We're all busy, so anything that helps us find excellent learning opportunities is much appreciated.
Sure. Here are some things you should assess when doing an evaluation of a learning activity. First is the overall quality of the learning experience. So this could involve many different factors, but most people can judge the quality.
Another important factor to assess is to what extent were your learning needs and expectations met. It may have been an excellent event or activity, but you weren't able to learn what you wanted.
A related evaluation factor is what impact did your learning have on your practice? To answer this question may take some time. Also, impact on your performance may be a difficult factor to assess.
Another factor is cost effectiveness.
Oh, sure.
If there were costs associated with this activity or event, such as registration fees or travel, etc., did you feel the learning benefits were worth it? Are there other more cost-effective ways you could have gained the same knowledge and skills?
Yeah. And lastly, include recommendations along with comments and notes. And the last step, as every nurse knows, is the documentation. The documentation should include such information as the dates the learning plan activities were completed and the results and impacts on your practice of successfully completing the learning.
That's right, Jill. And you know, it's probably useful to also include any evaluation comments and recommendations and notes.
If you are a part of a formal continuing competence program, then you're probably required to report on your learning plan achievements on an annual basis. Most likely, you will be required to submit some type of confirmation or proof that you actually completed the learning. Learning can be done in many different formats. The format that works best for you will be influenced by several factors. These include your personal commitment and the time you have available to learn.
Your choice of learning format will also depend on your need for a flexible schedule and the resources you have available, such as money, technology, and knowledge about how to use it, transportation, and support groups.
So it's important for you to choose the learning format that works best for you. Otherwise, it may be difficult to achieve the objectives laid out in your learning plan. There are many different ways to learn in order to maintain and enhance your professional competence. Here are a few ways you can learn.
Formal credit courses taken at accredited institutions, review of workplace manuals and documents, review of related videos or professional publications, attendance at employer-provided in-services, seminars, or workshops, vendor-specific training with or without a certificate, and attendance at topic-specific conferences. And here are several more different ways to learn.
Job-mandated in-services and reviews, attendance at professional conventions, conferences, annual and general meetings, participation on committees at work, training and mentoring new staff and students, and internet research and learning. And finally, here are a few more.
Yeah, case reviews and rounds, presentations at meetings, convention, and in-service workshops, study groups or clubs, development and revision of policies and procedures, observation and working with other experienced healthcare professionals, and e-learning tutorials and courses. Wow, that is some list.
Yes, there are many, many different ways to learn. So there are no excuses about not being able to find a suitable learning activity. Select the ones that work best for you. Well, that brings us to the end of this second module. Carlos, care to summarize what we covered?
Okay. We began this module by discussing the importance of ongoing learning and professional development for nurses. We then defined competency and a continuing competence program. Next, we took a fairly detailed look at a 6-step continuing competence program. The 6 steps were identifying learning needs, prioritizing learning needs, preparing a learning plan, executing your learning plan, evaluating and documenting the results. We then listed the many different ways that learning and professional development could take place. Let's see, did I miss anything?
No, you covered the key points. Goodbye for now. Carlos and I will see you again in the next module.
Goodbye.